Mr. Carraher, good morning to you. You may approach, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Mark Carraher and I represent the appellant Matthew Zimmer in this appeal of the denial of his motion to return the property. Specifically in this case, it is his family's heirloom shotgun. The central issue before this court is the interpretation of two subsections of Section 29.820. What that governs when the property must be released and when it must be destroyed following a criminal prosecution. Our position is that the county and district court erred in interpreting the statute and finding that the heirloom shotgun was used in the commission of the crime.
Do we have in the record before us the factual basis that was presented to the county court to support the conviction of the offense for which your client was convicted?
What we have is two police reports. So
I take it the answer is no.
I believe that the factual basis was read aloud at the plea hearing.
And that's not in our record.
I don't, it may be in the Bill of Exceptions, but I don't, I believe what you have is the factual basis from the hearing on the motion to return property.
Don't we just have in the county court bill of exceptions the proceedings from the motion for return of the property, and we do not have the proceedings from the arraignment, plea, and sentencing on the charge of which your client was actually convicted?
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
All right. Does that make a difference?
I believe what you have is a more expansive report in the motion to return property. Those two exhibits, those two police reports, more expansive than what was likely read at the plea hearing.
Who has the burden in a motion to return for a motion like this? Who has the burden? Do you have the burden to show that the object was not used in the commission of the crime, or does the state have the burden to show that it was?
I'm not sure which one has the burden. I believe since it is the motion of the appellant, that it likely is the appellant, the defendant's motion and burden. But I suspect that because there's the police reports that were offered by the state at the motion to return property that do give an account of what happened with Mr. Zimmer, and it gives an account of.
Are those proper documents to be considered by the court in this type of situation? Are they, you hear the term Shepherd's documents and determining whether a person should is unlawfully in possession of a firearm or they're precluded from owning a firearm, and there's certain documents such as a factual basis or jury instructions or a judge's factual findings setting forth that the defendant was in fact in possession of a firearm or did in fact commit a crime of domestic violence, misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. Those types of Shepherd documents, the U.S. Supreme Court's talked about a great amount. Are the documents we had today equal to those Shepherd's documents? Are they greater or are they lesser?
Your Honor, I suppose I'm simply just not familiar with the standard of the Shepherd's document. I would submit to the court that they do give an account of what happened. And they help the court answer the question whether this weapon, this firearm, was used in the commission of an offense.
Let's assume that those documents are enough. The merits of the argument is that the weapon wasn't used in the commission of the crime that your client was convicted of.
Right.
Why not?
The crime that my client was convicted of was refused to comply with the order of police. If we look at the elements that refuse to comply with order of police, it does not involve anything with the shotgun, nothing in the factual basis when he's committing the crime of refuse to comply with order of police involves anything to do with the shotgun. There's actually no confirmation that my client ever used the shotgun, period.
Why were the police called back to the location the second time?
There was an allegation that there was gunshots heard. The state never charged my client with anything to do with the firearm. They had the option of doing so. They did not do so. And this does create this absurd result where the state can more easily deprive someone of the firearm by not charging someone with the crime that involves the firearm than by doing it and affording my client with due process to address those allegations. So that is an absurd result. We do not know. We're not able to, the conviction for refuse to comply with order for police does not resolve the question of who, if anyone, fired the firearm on the night of November 14th, 2018.
They go to the residence because of the discharge of the firearm. There's a 3-hour standoff. Your client threatens to go back into the house to retrieve the shotgun. Ultimately, the shotgun is found inside the house. Those shell casings, spent shell casings, found inside the house. Do those factors have anything to be considered in determining whether the firearm was used to commission the crime of not following a lawful order?
But what's clear from those facts is that the police officers never see my client with the firearm in his actual possession. He mentions the firearm. That's true. He can mention a firearm from his neighbor's house, for example, and that wouldn't give the police the right to say that that firearm was used in the commission of this offense. The crime of refusal to comply with order of police does not include this firearm, and all we have here is an unproven allegation that this firearm was used in the commission of the offense. And using the commission is a higher standard than constructive possession of a firearm in someone's house. When there's constructive possession of the firearm, That's something that's only used in the drug or narcotics context. There's not really a firearm, a possession of a firearm in and of itself is not antisocial or illegal. It's only when it's combined with an illegal action, such as being a felon or actually holding the firearm or having it within your immediate control, that makes it illegal. And we know that the word use of a firearm, when compared to possession of a firearm, use of a firearm is a higher standard than possession. And we know that because of how use and possession is used in the entire criminal code.
What was the state's theory of what the crime was committed here? Was it the refusal to follow the direct of the police, or was it the discharge of the firearm?
The state's theory was that Mr. Zimmer was uncooperative on the front porch when the police officer asking to take him into custody. He was yelling, and so they never actually alleged anything with the firearm. The firearm was mentioned in the police reports, but it was not part of.
And to be clear, I'm asking about at the hearing on the motion for the return of property. Sure. What was the state's theory of the crime that was committed for purposes of 29821E?
The state's theory was that because the police officer called to a situation that allegedly involved a firearm, that was somehow used in the commission of the crime, refused to comply with order of police. I don't believe that theory holds up, simply because the police could be mistaken about a reason to bring someone to make an order that someone needs to comply with, but that doesn't.
I beg your pardon. I think maybe the question is implied here is, what is the order that the defendant refused to follow? Was it move along, come towards me, put down your firearm? What is the order for which refusal is charged?
Thank you. The order was to comply with being put under arrest. And to come towards them. No firearm was present when the officers were making these commands, so there was no command about putting down a firearm or anything like that.
Was this firearm seized as evidence in the first place?
This firearm, I believe, was seized as evidence because I think the police did make a citation for unlawful discharge of a firearm. The state ultimately decided not to charge that as a crime. And I'm not aware of the reason for that, but it could be that there was insufficient evidence to prove that. And I think that brings us to the point of this was an unproven allegation, and the framework that's this, the district court and the county court have set up here is that it is more easy for the state to take away someone's firearm by having it be on the periphery with not actually charging a crime that involves this than by actually affording due process and for the offense that involves the property of the firearm.
Is the state entitled on a return of property proceeding to change the theory of the offense for which a defendant has been convicted?
I would submit that they should not do that, but I'm not aware of.
Is there anything in the statute that precludes that?
I'm not aware of anything in statute that precludes that, but it does appear to be some kind of a possible violation of due process when the state's changing its theory from what the conviction was to fit a new theory for the purpose of winning a motion to return property.
There's nothing in the statute that actually says that the crime referred to has to be the convicted crime that the gun was taken for.
It does say, though, a crime.
It just says crime. Actually, it drops even the word a
and
or commission of crime shall be destroyed.
And I appreciate that. But what my position was that a crime cannot mean an unproven allegation under Nebraska legislature's intent. And
well, is it unproven, or does the state have to prove it at this hearing on the motion for the return of property?
It'd be my position that they'd have to prove it with an afforded due process at some point for it to be considered a crime.
What are you asking this court to do? To send it back for some new kind of hearing? Is that what you want?
My request would be to reverse the district court and send back with instructions to sustain the motion to return property. If the court's not willing to do that, it would be to have there be additional findings of fact for additional hearing. But either one of those situations would be something my client would be asking for.
If the factual basis had contained the information contained in the police reports and the probable cause affidavit for arrest, and your client admitted to didn't object to the factual basis and continued his plea of guilty, does that change our analysis? As opposed to this information coming in at the motion for return of property, the information coming in at the time of the entry of the plea.
I believe the analysis that the court needs to make is whether or not this was used in the commission of an adjudicated crime.
No matter when we get that evidence, either at the time of the plea or the time of the motion for return of property.
I believe the court can use evidence throughout the time of the course of this case to make that determination. And I believe I'm out of time. I would submit on my brief then. Thank you.
Mr. Carrier, before you go, city did not file a brief in this matter. Does that have any relevance as to how we are to approach this case?
The result of that is that we don't know the position of the state in this case. We don't know the position of the state because they didn't file a brief at the district court level.
Is that a concession?
I would like it to be a concession, but I don't have the authority. I'm not aware of the authority to support that necessarily. And just out of candor of the court, I don't know that there is authority for that, but I would hope that the court may treat it as a concession. So with that, I would submit.
Thank you very much. Court will proceed then to the next case of the day, which is State versus Heedle. Justice Breidenberg is recused from this matter.